Welcome to the podcast after the podcast. This is Short Rest.
Welcome to Short Rest, everybody. Intro no more 2024. And apologies, we just watched Viva Rock Vegas, the Flintstones present Viva Rock Vegas for the mixed bag. So if we start talking about the Flintstones at any point, know that
I won't. I can have this.
They're on the mind.
We already did for an hour and a half, and we might not be able to stop.
It was one of our longer mixed bags.
We had a lot to say, man.
Yeah. The plot was quite simple. It shouldn't have taken that long to get through it.
I mean, like, Emily kept bringing up how it is like historically significant. So now I'm just like, thinking about it more and more.
I wasn't saying it was historically significant. It was sandwiched between other historic events.
Right. No, it just happened around a time of a lot of things.
It's a watershed film. Yeah. We can all agree.
If Billy Joel wrote We Didn't Start the Fire in the early 2000s, he, of course, would have referenced Viva Rock Vegas.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Part of the culture
at the
time.
Speaking of Billy Joel, I was at the Pottery Studio yesterday, and they played Piano Man.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's like a really beautiful song.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah. Yeah, we know.
I hated it. I don't think it's like one of those songs that you hear so much that I don't think I ever had like a first time hearing it, proper first time hearing it. But it was just like, what a wild thing to have become a pop song.
Yeah, just taking some time to appreciate Billy Joel.
I'm a major Billy Joel head.
Yeah. Really?
I like Billy Joel.
I was sitting there being like, you really put this piano solo into a pop song? I love it.
Yeah.
Billy Joel did not give a fuck. And people just loved him for who he was.
Wow. Just like Viva Rock Vegas.
Just like the Great Kazoo.
The man had a mission and he carried it out, folks. Right. But we have a mission, which is to talk about this episode.
Yes, excellent transition, Causal Tanner. Very good.
You're welcome, Dum Dum.
Yeah, no. You cannot reference the Great
Kazoo. Oh my God, I just realized next time we do D&D court and we say Dum Dum, I'm going to have flashbacks to the Great Wazoo.
Okay, you have to explain it because not everyone knows who the Great Kazoo is.
Well, they'll find out.
Or they aren't on the mixed bag.
Right, yeah, it's true.
So there was a character that was like a sign that the Flintstones has jumped a shark where Fred has a little alien buddy that only he can see. And I think Barney can see in a few episodes.
Yeah. And sometimes children, you said?
And sometimes children, sort of, you know, fairy pixie rules, whatever.
Right, yeah.
And calls Fred Dum Dum all the time.
I'm not disparaging Murph. That's referencing something.
Yeah.
It's clever because it's
me
a reference.
Me and Caldwell may or may not have gotten into a fight about the Great Kazoo. before. We're going to power through.
We have to focus
We have to focus.
We have to be professional.
Yeah.
Like Barney and Fred.
God damn it. I guess it's my fault. I made this happen. This is kind of similar to what happened at the beginning of the episode, because as soon as you guys started running, as Zunark is trying to kind of push you guys out the door, you guys are laughing at all of your puns about Kestra listening in on you. There's like,
oh yeah,
oh,
I forget the exact puns.
Leave puns.
There's leave puns. There's
leaves dropping. Ambushed.
Yeah, there's leaves dropping. And then everyone had to pause and say how funny Saul was.
Well, before that even happened, we had a similar thing occur, which is that we were like talking before the episode started about like how many
moons. Is this the moon?
And then Em brought it up apropos of nothing.
Right.
While I'm doing the intro, how many moons does Bohemia have?
I like the like ritual that you have to do where it's just like, okay, we're going to bring this over into the episode proper.
Right.
Like we have to like bring it, we have to pierce the veil so that we can talk about this. And now it has been sanctioned fully.
I think it's just so funny that whenever we're doing a bit before we start recording, Murph has this look on his face that's like, all right, guys, can we not bring this up when we start recording? And there's just a part of me that's like, it's all I can think about now.
Yeah.
Well, my brain is screaming.
We have to.
Yeah.
It has to be
you
addressed.
You guys just have to troll me. Well, it happens a lot when, so Jake is often remote, and so I'm trying to sync up the audio with Jake. Mm-hmm. Well, the fucking children at the table here with me, called on Emily, are just giggling about something else. And I'm like, can everyone stop so we can sync up the audio and get into the episode?
The problem is you don't understand that when you chastise, you do it with a smile.
Yeah, true. Yeah, you know that I like it a little bit.
It's also, I don't know why it will never not be funny to me to just like every time you do a clap, I have to respond in some way. We always have to be like, that was a great clap. We have to rank the clap every time.
Yeah.
It's actually gotten, it's really weighing on me, the clap ranking.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure.
If I recall, this episode had a pretty good clap. I think we liked the
this
clap.
This is a pretty
strong latency on the clap.
We've missed a couple. So
this, I don't think this was a double clap. I think this is a one and done.
Okay, so just for anyone at home that doesn't know how to sync up audio when you record audio, we have to explain things. So when you have us running the mics in LA and you've got Jake running it in New York, we have to make sure the audio is on the same time. So me and Jake on the Zoom do a clap and then we sync up the claps in Zoom.
And when we were all remote during the pandemic, we all would clap.
That was fun.
And
that
so
was
the transition, small, the transition from all of us clapping to then just Murph and Jake.
Yeah.
My instinct is always like, I gotta clap.
Yeah, it was a rough 6 months of you guys still clapping off time while me and Jake were trying to sync it up.
The phantom clap.
There was one time when Caldwell just actually clapped like by accident.
Yeah.
Very, very.
Oh, there was many times.
There were many times when we get off.
And then sometimes we'll do it just to see if there's a delay. I'll say my name, you say yours. And and then like Caldwell should be like, Caldwell Tanner. And I'm like, not you, you're here already.
It's a phantom impulse, you know?
Yeah, no, we did it for so long.
We did do it for pretty much all of Eldermorn.
Yeah.
That's how we recorded it.
It's like how Fred forgets sometimes that Gazoo is someone God only he can it. See.
He does forget that. It is true.
All right. But anyway, we established that there's 25 moons in Bahumia, and
which
then we
I'm
found out
about.
That Kaestra was spying on us.
Yes.
Do you know, 25 moons in Bahumia means that's 25 different little mini campaigns we could do.
Whoa.
On each of those moons. Each of those moons could have a different flavor.
Yes.
A campaign per moon.
Yeah.
Well, I love a little planetoid.
If the Earth had a lot of moons.
Well, this is like the three-body problem, which is what if a planet had three suns, but what if a planet had 25 moons?
Well, we already know, what would happen if a planet had two suns. That's Tatooine.
That's true, and it's just really hot.
You just said that so proudly. From the man who just like ripped into the Flintstones.
I didn't rip in that hard. I was being funny. Okay, so it says that if we had a lots of moons, gravitational pull of a second moon could cause tides to be higher or smaller. Okay.
So epic waves.
I think we'd have epic waves.
But they could also be smaller. So I think
Would they be righteous?
The 25 moons of Bahumia just make the tides righteous.
So they're so gnar. Okay.
Okay, so we should do more surfing.
It also says tidal waves could trigger dormant volcanoes and cause earthquakes. So that's
whoa.
Tough.
Whoa.
Okay. So
okay. So we do lava surfing.
The moon itself might be covered in volcanoes. What?
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
I'll look into it. I also didn't know that the three-body problem was about three suns.
Yeah.
That makes it more interesting to me. I thought it was more abstract science that I wasn't going to be able to understand.
It's a lot of abstract science, but like the main crux of the book is about like, you know, like a fictional experiment where there's like a planet with three suns and like people like trying to figure out like how a species could exist on that planet. Cause like when there's three suns, they're spinning around, they're going crazy. They're like making the weather like totally unpredictable.
Whoa, that's crazy.
Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go back to our actual
episode. Let's go back to our actual
episode. I'm really committed to this now.
Yeah. We're sorry for getting sidetracked, man.
Hey, it's all right. You know, three-body problem, kind of like
the one bringing up
Tatooine and Earth combined, right?
You won't shut up about fucking Tatooine, dude.
Sorry, I can't stop talking.
Can we talk about your episode?
Tatooine. All right, fine. We'll talk about my stupid fucking campaign. right off the bat, so you guys escape out the back, and then the Fatebringer mages show up.
Oh my gosh.
Gloam wings.
Love the Fatebringers.
Yeah.
They're,
love
so
the Gloam wings.
They're a cool, they will definitely be back, so we will see. I don't want to totally give up their stat block, but I will say that they're a combination of a few things and then some homebrew. They've got some stats from the Drow Inquisitor. That's why they have like the lance and the dagger that they can like move with their mind. They've got some diviner wizard spells, and then they also have some like evocation spells, because that's just, I don't know, evocation spells are just more fun. That's like when you you know, throw lightning and shit like that.
Nice.
Throw fireballs.
I'm recreating the stat block in my mind. I'm perfectly able to metagame now,
right? So since we are already at odds with the Flintstones slash Tatooine and everything, we might as well get back to a point of contention in this podcast, which is critting on initiative. Because Caldwell crit on initiative, and once again, I am proven completely correct that it is actually awesome to crit on initiative.
It's good to roll high on initiative. Critting versus, it's bad to roll low. I feel like it was really exposed because Caldwell crit and everybody else rolled so bad.
Yeah, you all did roll very bad. Yeah, I will say that these guys have the same feat as Saul, which is alert. So they have plus five. So they have a plus 10 to their initiative.
Wow.
So barring a 15 or higher, Saul does act after them.
Wow.
And so Saul being able to go like 150 feet into the woods and then avoid the Bigby's hand spell and everything, that, you know, if Saul was just standing still, if Saul rolled like a 10 and had like a 20 or something and went behind these guys, he could have gotten blasted by like a cone of cold that's like a constitution saving throw or something. And it's just like, he doesn't have a ton of HP.
Yeah, that was the place to crit. Yeah, that was the initiative to crit on.
For sure.
Yeah, critting on a chase initiative. But I feel like also in general, I've never really thought to try to have better initiative. It's not really occurred to me because oftentimes I'm playing like, well, I guess actually I don't really play spellcasters as much as I wish I did, but like oftentimes I'm like, let me get a lay of the land before I go. Yeah. So it's like, I feel like when you have spells, you're like, I need to see what they're doing before. But I feel like with Saul, you always roll such good initiative and it always comes in really handy. So I feel like it's given me a different perspective.
Yeah. I think it's like stressful for me because I'm like, okay, I have to go first. Like I need to like kind of like set the tone for like what we're going to do this battle. But
it seems like it's always been really helpful.
Yeah.
And we edit the show too. So you can, you know, since it's theater of the mind, when we oftentimes I'll describe something, but then when we get caught up in like trying to figure out what we're doing with our spells and everything, people forget things. And there are lots of times that I give you guys the lay of the land that gets like edited out of the episode. We just kind of like, you know, remind you guys like where everybody's at and everything.
It is the thing about playing a monk where sometimes I feel bad about being like, cool, I'm just gonna run away.
But that was totally the right move.
I think it's
right,
like,
that was what all of us wanted to do.
And it was also like it also when there's a bunch of mages, you don't want to all stand right next to each other.
Only did you knock out one of the Fatebringers later, just fully knock him out of the fight, you had him out of the fight the whole time because he was chasing you.
Yeah.
He ended up throwing one fireball because he couldn't find you at one point. But like, for all intents and purposes, that one dude was just concentrated on chasing you the whole time.
Yeah. It is true. Yeah, like just pretending, remembering that I can just be like, you know, the mouse to the cat in the situation and like lead them away is always very helpful.
And I do think that initiative is more important in our games as our combat gets more dynamic. Mm-hmm. I feel like we, at this point in the show, we never ever do fights that are just two people stand there and swing their swords at each other. There's always something's moving. There's different, you know, heights and, you know, there's like somebody's on the roof and someone's in the basement and, you know, there's like always places to run to. There's always things to interact with. It's very rare that the only thing you're doing is, you know, Final Fantasy waiting your turn to just like attack the guy in front of you.
Playing a monk has been really fun for that because it has like challenged me to like think about the actual map and the battlefield a little more. I think like with Beverly, I got there a little bit with Zerk because like Zerk would run away a lot too. But like with Beverly, it was a little bit just like, yep, I'm going to go up and I'm going to smite. And that's what I do.
Yeah,
for sure.
But yeah, I will say this leads perfectly into a thorn of mine for the episode, which was since I had run ahead and I wasn't sure like what to do with the rest of my turn, I used one of our shell phone calls. And it worked out well because it like meant that we had that connection to Ursia for later on for the non-detection spell. But big thorn for me for wasting one of our phone calls
I wouldn't be hard on yourself about that. I feel like you just have to, a lot of times you just don't know what the right thing is until after.
Sometimes when you're on a trip, you just need to call a friend.
Well, it's also good because it kind of showcased why she only gave us three charges, because you know, like, she doesn't want those phone calls all the time.
Saul is definitely the kind of guy that will just like call and like leave a really long voicemail.
Hey, I'm in the car. You around?
Yeah.
It's 9:48 on a Tuesday. Scratch that. Wednesday. Where does the time go? Where does it go?
Got about 3 hours to go on this trip. Yeah. I'm going to stop at the Waffle House if I can find one. But like, I'm just driving. So like, yeah, what are you up to?
Saul runs off. And then you guys, not only do you not crit on initiative, but the rest of you roll bad on initiative.
So bad.
And there
so
was, yeah, bad. Two Fate Bringers. They're Gloam Wings, which are, you know, they got like, I think like 100-ish HP. They're no joke. They have that flyby ability that doesn't provoke opportunity attacks. They can swoop down and do two claw attacks. Pretty serious stuff. And then I had two squads of knights. One of them rolled bad on initiative, so it was after Callie, but everyone else was before you. Yeah. Or actually, Calder may have gone before one of the squads. But you guys had two Fatebringers on these like dragon-esque creatures and a full squad of knights on griffins going with like enchanted arrows.
You can really feel how dynamic Murph makes these battles when they're all happening at you to your character.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten to go yet. Like, oh, wow.
I'm taking a lot of dynamic damage.
Yeah, I'm not supposed to be standing still, huh?
I have to run, man.
Yeah.
I have a thorn.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Which is, I think, obviously, I guess it's not really like, how was I going to find out except for by doing it? But I kind of, because I was torn for my first turn between like, oh, do I try to take out a Gloam Wing with smiting? Because then I can get my AC up. Or do I take a turn, cast Speak with Animals to try to tell all the griffins to run away?
Ooh.
But then I was like, you know what? Getting my AC, I don't know how if I'm going to be able to outrun these people. I'm going to try and get my AC up by attacking. But then I couldn't even take the Gloam Wing out in one go.
Yeah.
So it just totally.
It was tough. I wonder what your average like output is on your like fourth level smites.
I don't know.
Because they've got a decent amount of HP. It would have been a tough. Although sometimes you just do like 70 or 80 damage.
I really feel like I can't. Sometimes I'm like, all right, like fourth level smite, my biggest smite. Here we go.
Yeah,
and then it's like a little dinker. And then sometimes I'm like, okay, second level smite, well, it won't be that impressive. And then I'm like, whoa, that's actually pretty good.
Yeah,
I can't predict it for
in
life.
Just three of them, right, would be, what is the most D8 you can do? Five?
Five. It's
five.
If
okay.
It's a fourth level spell,
so that's
then it's
15
five.
D8s. I wonder.
Although I should have asked if any of them were undead. Wasn't there something that Beverly would always get extra D8s?
Yeah.
Oh, that might
like undead.
Is that
like
something
an extra D8?
Is that something later though for like a full paladin or
yes?
No, I think it's
no. Is that wrong?
I think it's as soon as you can smite.
Oh shit!
Really?
Okay. Well, maybe you should have been doing more damage because they are large undead.
Damn. Oh, I've been waiting for that to come up in the campaign because I was like, I feel like Beverly was always getting these extra D8s.
Yeah, definitely.
My first time.
Definitely when we were in the Shadowfell, was getting a lot
of
extra D8s.
No, I did, because I remember when there were zombies at one point, I was like, this is my chance.
Okay, so you could have done a little bit more damage, certainly.
Wow, you might have knocked it out.
I'm rolling 15 D8 and getting 74.
Because then I would have rolled three extra D8s, because I think 78. I hit it each time.
Mm. Yeah.
There's just three extra D8s, so I could have rolled three ones.
It would have been tough to get 136 damage is what you would have done to down one in a turn. That's not easy.
Despite the smites, though, very Rose-worthy moves and performance by you, Callie, because I really liked casting Reduce on that griffin was really inspiring.
And that and was also, I was like, do I reduce it? And then I was like, well, then that has to be a concentration spell, and I don't know. Yeah, no, it was really cute to have a teacup.
Yeah.
You guys caught on very fast that the move was to take out basically all of the flying creatures, reduce people, use command, use things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. I love running combats where you're using different skills and spells than you would normally use. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. It was like a really good chance to like use, I don't know, like I was like using all the monk stuff. It was nice to like really like use the full like monk catalog.
I mean, huge Rose too. That's an awesome Saul moment, is hiding up in the trees, then jumping out, getting on the back of the Gloam Wing, stunning a dude, and then just doing a push attack and just throwing him into the woods.
It's absolutely
it's
epic.
A chase. Yeah. He's gone. There's no way. He's not going to catch up to you guys.
It's been like so many episodes since I've gotten a stun to work. Murph's been rolling so well.
It's definitely true.
it's like a 17, which is like right on the
know, I think because it's a constitution save, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you want to go after it, like going after a mage has the like is gonna in many situations have a lower
you were trying to you were trying
whenever
to stun
you see someone whenever you see someone like sort of skinny and smart, you're like, oh, I could stun you.
Mm-hmm. scenes.
It's a really satisfying stunt too. It just puts a stop to what all of the shenanigans that you were about to bring.
What if they're skinny, but they have like a really strong core? What if like their core is absolutely shredded though?
That is a good question. Mm-hmm. Like, does constitution, is it more about core or is it more about limbs?
What if the wizard put their spell book like over under their shirt, like where their abs are?
I think you would chop at the neck. I think that if the core is strong, you could go for neck.
That's true. Yeah. The neck's going to be weak from craning over their books and tomes.
Right, exactly. You just need an extremity.
Yeah. Like whenever you're up against beefy dudes, like I feel like if you have something that has a wisdom save, you're like, I have a hopeful chance that you have a lower wisdom.
Yeah.
And whenever you're up against like mages and stuff, you're like, okay, fingers crossed, your con isn't as good.
I mean, that is the nice thing about the monk though, where it's just like, it's kind of free to stun. It's just like, let's see if it works. Just one key point, like why not?
Because you get your key points back for like a short rest.
Yeah. But yeah, that was very satisfying to knock that guy off. That is another thorn for me, of course, was that the I could not tame the Gloamwing. I really would have loved to have had another mount during our party.
I feel like I kept trying to do the DM wink, wink. You're trying to hide. Don't bring a screeching beast with you.
I know.
I kept being like, probably not going
to
work. Right?
I could see it playing out and I was sitting there being like, I think Caldwell needs to crit for this to work.
Yeah. I mean, I would have, with a certain role, I would have been like, it goes with you. And instead of hiding in the woods, you are now flying over the tree line.
Yeah.
The fate bringers that were out of the fight cast polymorph on you. You fall in front of them.
Also, you described it as like the Nazgul or whatever from Lord of the Rings. And I was like, you'd need to crit to win one of those over.
It's also,
I mean,
we would do like rule of cool. So of course, if you like crit on it or something, we'd say that like you were able to control it, but it is technically just like an undead monster.
Right.
I
do the forehead touch they do in House of the Dragon.
Yeah.
Whoa. The thing is too bad. It's so much better to imagine you struggling on top of a Nazgul.
Yeah.
Riding it majestically. It's just better, man.
But this is like the
trick of crit, but it's funnier.
Yeah.
Oh, agreed. Absolutely better. But this is the trick of D&D is like you look at your sheet sometimes and you like kind of gaslight yourself to be like, I've got a +5. Yeah. I've got a +5 to animal handling. Like I can do this.
I mean, a lot of times it's just like, I don't know. Why don't I see if magic happens?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why don't I try? Exactly. Also, it's funny picturing you like pressing your forehead against a Nazgul and being like, friend, we serve a common
Whispering in fake Elvish.
Tisnama.
So you guys were chased along. Awesome moment from Saul. Some great moments from Callie and Calder of just freezing people, commanding people, slowing people, getting the mounts to not follow.
Yeah. It's nice for Calder because like the Eldritch Knight thing is always like it is so much more damage for me to swing my sword than to do any of my spells. But when we're when we have to do stuff from range and I just get to shoot freezing rays, I'm like, this is great. This is just a fun moment for the character.
I think it's almost like Murph has given you so many weapons that do stuff that it almost is like your spells are not as powerful as a cool item, you know?
Right, definitely. It's fun to remind myself that Calder is magic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But using Shard to cast a spell was like the perfect Calder move.
Yeah, I didn't know Shard could do that.
Yeah. Technically on a hit, but Murph let me cast it just once on one guy.
Murph let him cheat real quick.
I let him cheat so quick.
Okay.
Because I was too excited to do it.
Yeah, because I think the purpose...
Did you cut out me and Emily protesting that?
Yeah, you guys were like, well, that's not fair.
Yeah.
That's not fair at all.
I said, dude, that's cheap.
Let me tame the Nazgul, dude.
That's freaking cheap. Give me a Nazgul.
After getting very beaten up the first round, you started to really gain control of the battlefield in the second round. But Callie was in kind of the danger zone because she had fallen behind
because of
that first round.
I took insane amounts of damage.
You took so much damage. Luckily, Kenna was able to get over to you and give you a potion. Yeah. Then we had the reveal that one of the knights was Glenn.
Oh my God. I didn't see that coming at all.
Really?
Not even a second. It didn't even occur to me.
I feel like I had said last episode, or I'm kind of, you know, Glenn is very much, it seems like his job has been that he has been brought on to track you guys.
Yeah.
Because the diviners can't, you know, just divine where you're going to be.
Yeah.
So there's a good chance that Callie had revealed to Glenn like where she had lived or where she had hidden out or things like that. So Glenn probably was even had suspicions that you'd be in Roussel and maybe was even, you know,
divulged her entire life story to Glenn. It was the first time someone was a willing audience, and obviously he was putting on an act, acting more interested, and she probably was just like, I will tell you everything.
Yeah.
Just nice to know he was listening, you know?
Yeah, you're right.
It's weird that he had that boutonniere that made a clicking noise.
But yeah, that's also flashing forward a little bit, but that's a funny misunderstanding that I kept having to speak through Kenna, because you guys kept being like now he's gone and seduced the queen and like all his machinations. And I kept being as Kenna being like, I think he's not that important. Brought here to chase you. I don't think he's
but I
with
feel
the
like
queen.
It's fun for the yeah. for the characters to think yeah. he's Definitely. So important.
Right, yeah. right. He has an outsized role in our head.
Yeah, exactly.
But
you know,
but
yeah.
there are people online who get mad at me thinking that like the story is bad because yeah. this guy who has nothing to do with the Winter Court is suddenly the most important guy in the Winter Court. And I have to say, that's not what's happening.
Oh, I didn't know that was happening.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's just a recurring character.
I just thought it was funny to be like, no, Kenna, you don't understand.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. No, really, it's definitely, it's a funny thing, but I'm saying I feel like, you know, just because this is a show that we're doing, if everyone has like a theory that is like incorrect based on like the kind of information that you already have.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do feel like I need to have an NPC be like, I don't know though, guys, where does it say here that he's having sex with the queen? It seems like he's just one of the spies that Jovir put in and she's using him to just like track you guys and worm tongue the queen and stuff.
I love Kenna's role. Like I love that she like kind of fills that role because it's just like, by all intents and purposes, like ostensibly she should be like the one that knows the least, she's just like this like smart little squire that's like, what are you guys talking about?
Yeah.
Kenna's so wise.
Well, because you guys have all this baggage with Glenn, right? But she's just like looking at the magazine going like, I'm sorry, where does it say here that like Queen Cirilla left the king and is with Glenn now? Does it say that in the magazine? I didn't.
Yeah.
She's always the adult in the room.
Yeah.
I have a rose for Emily though. Just the way that Callie is really consistently manipulated. Like, she just falls into Glenn's trap.
Yeah.
I think that's really great.
Well, you know, I think like when it was him, there was a part of me that it thrilled me, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I have to be honest to that. Like, and then I actually like wrote about it later and I was like, why is she still affected? Like, it felt like almost still so affected. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I mean, she literally, this was someone who came along with the promise of almost like an escape for Calliope from her two losses back in the Feywild. And she hasn't really remedied those two losses, you know? So she, the lore of the escape, the lore of his promises are still effective. And also like, I mean, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with playing a character who could also have some toxic attraction.
Like, I think it would be easy to be like, oh, all right, Callie's arc is that now we're here and she actually doesn't care about Glenn and she's not, she's not going to be manipulated.
Have we really even like, earned
it,
that? You know,
I think it's cooler to do what you're doing.
Yeah.
But also that plays into a story of like, it will be more interesting in the end confrontation with Glenn if there was some kind of conflict going into it.
Yeah.
That if right then, if Callie was just like, I hate you, fuck you, you're dead, I win.
Right.
Then that wouldn't be like an epic kind of showdown. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I mean, also even just like ask the player in the moment when it was him, there was like a fuck you, but also like it was like a little thrilling. So I was like, I gotta honor the fact that it still thrills me.
Yeah. I mean, it's undeniably a sexy way to enter. Just like disguise yourself as a Griffin Knight and then just like pop out at the last moment. Like the dude, you know what? He's suave. You gotta give him that.
And there's like something like fun, like playing this, there's something fun about, oh, fuck, you got one over on me, right?
It is like, it is at this point, you guys are, I mean, at this point, you're way higher status than him because there was a time.
But he still just got one over on me. So I almost have to be like, tip my hat to him in a way.
So it is like a weird, like, rivalry thing too.
Yeah, maybe
like, now you're playing this like game too.
Cat and mouse, right?
Yeah, it is a cat and mouse game.
Yeah.
I really like, you've done a good job this campaign of having like unconventional villain classes too.
Oh.
I guess like that goes back to campaign one. I don't know what I'm talking about. Like a paladin, the cleric villain, yeah. But like having a like arcane archer ranger villain and like having them be good at tracking us is just like, it makes so much sense. And I feel like it feels so fresh. And you know what? I've been surprised by you on Griffinback. So a rose to that.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, yeah, I thought Glenn made sense for this because it makes sense that if Queen Jovir is using diviners and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But she can't predict
diviners
any
crackers,
of your stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, we got to get you the old fashioned way where, well, there's this person that, you know, through their, you know, psyops or whatever, or through their observing of the material plane,
mm-hmm.
they're aware of Glenn and some of these things that have gone on with you guys. They're like, we will bring him on board. And then his job is to sort of essentially either actually track you and actually find where you're going to be based on his own experience with you guys, or with things like getting a piece of your hair so that they can scry on you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It was really fun too, because I have been thinking about how I want Calliope to cut her hair.
Yeah.
Because I just heard like a stupid, it's, I know it's like generic or whatever, but like the idea that like your hair holds your memories. Mm. And I was like, oh, that would feel good to like kind of like just get a refresh and be able to like enter her past with a little less baggage, you know?
Yeah.
So then when he took that, I was like, I mean, obviously I've only like, now I have like a shit haircut, but I'm like, okay, she's ready for like a proper
chop. She's
going to
give herself a haircut.
Yeah.
Hell
at
yeah.
Some
I
point.
Love a cinematic haircut.
Yeah.
It always feels good.
Callie needs a cinematic haircut.
I know. Yeah. I know. I feel like people are really hard on like the female cinematic haircut, but I do think it's like, well, it's a trope for a reason.
Yeah.
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 Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shout out to the cinematic haircut in Final Fantasy IX. Defining moment.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen that.
It's great. She's got like a long like princess ponytail and she takes a dagger and like slices it off. And then she says, I'm not Garnet anymore. I'm Dagger. And then 14-year-old Calwell like had to take a moment, had to take a lap.
Wow. That happens in Naruto too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sakura.
Cut her hair because somebody's like grabbing.
Yeah, I think like even though it's done a lot, it still is always effective to me as a viewer.
I'm going to go to the barber and ask for a cinematic haircut.
Yeah.
They're like, what does that mean? You're like, oh, I brought a dagger.
Yeah.
And I need to cut my hair with
I need this to be character defining to like show that I have a commitment to refining who I am, like my journey, my purpose. Is that extra?
Can you chase me?
So then that leads into bag strategy.
Yeah, the bag strat.
Which once again, I had to have Kenna pipe up and just be like, I think this isn't how scrying
works.
But
again, once Kenna was like piping in and saying it's not how it worked, it was funny to me to double down.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think. So the problem now with Glenn having gotten something from you guys so that now they can scry on Callie, the problem with that comes from when you guys get to like this archipelago and when you're trying to like find out what's happening with the summit and all of that, because then they can actually locate Callie and then that's an actual problem.
Yeah.
Getting scryed on though, especially if you use like the message cantrip or you're writing notes or you're doing something, there's a lot of ways to get around being made because they kind of just see, it's almost like they've got like a drone shot on like what's going on.
Yeah.
If you're just in the middle of the fucking woods, they already know you're in the woods. Like it's not easy to find people on foot in endless enchanted forest. You know what I mean? And same thing, you guys are next. Bit of the adventure is going out into the ocean, you know, like just seeing that someone is in the ocean is not
blue
really,
as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, it's not a tip.
As long as she doesn't look up at the stars, we're fine.
Right.
Do not look up. You're not allowed to gaze wistfully at the stars.
Yeah, true. They could get a hat. And star
like
map. That's all Callie does.
That's like my fucking thing.
Stare down.
My retirement is Star Maps by Calliope Petrichor.
Like a map to the stars, like in Hollywood?
No, a map to the stars in the sky.
I guess it could work.
Oh, and then we did have the fun thing that this was just improvised. You guys were asking Kenna about her relationship and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And well, because like I said, I was like, I don't know what this means yet that I'm still affected, but I guess I'll find it on his feet. But then I was like, why don't I use this to pivot and ask if anyone else has anything in their lives?
That was really sweet.
I was kind of just, I think in the moment I just took a beat and I was just like, who is it that Kenna would get along with? I was like, there'd probably be another person that was training to do something great to be like, but it wouldn't be, you know, I don't know. I feel like, especially probably wouldn't be somebody that's like exactly like her, but it would be somebody that like matched her ambition that she would be impressed by. Mm-hmm. Be like something. She looks up to somebody like Jaina Bronzebeard because someday she will be like Jaina Bronzebeard. Like someday she'll be like a great knight, but something like a mage or something would be like kind of wondrous and like, interesting in like a way that's kind of romantic.
Yeah.
What was her name? Kenna's crush?
Akriana.
A great name.
I really like asking Kenna about her life because I feel like Calliope is like low key, like one of my little subplots for her is trying to be the big sister to Kenna that she wishes that Syra was to her.
Yeah.
Everything does have like a new context to it with like the, you know, with all of the Syra lore that's been dropped and like the, you know, like the addition of like Syra and like pursuing her. I feel like, yeah, like having Glenn back, but like with, you know, the knowledge of Syra and like, you know, talking to Kenna, it all just like rings a little different in a fun way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought that was, I liked learning about Akriana.
Yeah. That was a fun.
I hope we get to meet her at the very end.
Yeah. That was a fun gift. Cause I was like, you asked me that and it would have been easy to like sidestep it. But I was like, there's no way that like a teenager doesn't have a crush on someone.
Right.
Yeah.
She like, has to know. You're like, who do you
like
someone?
Do you like anyone? Do you have someone? It's just like, of course.
It's like, oh yeah. I like five different people actually.
Yeah.
You know, she's like a little like workaholic, like a little budding workaholic who would like have a crush that she doesn't allow herself.
Totally.
You know, that she's like, I don't have time. I need to be a squire.
Yeah.
Akriana's so busy with her studies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just annoy her.
Yeah, that was funny. And then because it also fed into it. It's just, you know, one of those things where just like you stumble into something improvising because she had we had established that like Kenna has like bestiaries and she has all this stuff because she's studying because she's trying to become a knight. So she's looking up scry and stuff. And then later you guys are like, is she the one who gave you the book? And it's like this cute moment of like, yeah. And then you guys read the first page and you're telling her that like, I think she likes you back, which is very cute.
Yeah.
It's always a very fun position to be in when you get to like tell someone like, no, obviously she's into you.
Yeah.
Oh,
it'd
yeah.
It'd be really fucked up if at the very end, Akriana's like fighting with a bad guy.
Just like one of the bad guys.
Wow.
I don't like you, Kenna.
Fighting alongside Glenn.
Yeah. Jesus.
It's Glenn's little sister. What? Yeah.
This is confusing.
despite Kenna's protest, I did love the conversation about Callie being able to pull crown.
Yeah, that was very funny.
That was another thing that Kenna protesting it was like, no, we actually need to be stupider.
But I just really wanted to make it clear that Glenn is not like the new king of the Fae court. He's literally just essentially a hired mercenary. And other than that, has just been like living in the woods chasing you guys.
He's fallen from grace.
Yeah, he's absolutely. I think that Glenn's story right now.
But do you think that in Glenn's head, though, he thinks he's more of a power player? Because I think in his head, he thinks he's more of a power player.
Oh, like,
really?
No, he is not. So I will tell you the way I am playing Glenn right now, it is now more personal with Callie in a rival way.
Wow.
And that before.
See, that only thrills me too.
So before, Glenn thought in these grandiose visions that like he was going to save the Crick and he was going to be this person that was going to be like the new Peepaw and was going to like kind of take over and was going to be like the hero, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when that collapsed and then Big Bev was chasing him and stuff and he had to run away, he's at his absolute lowest point.
Ooh.
And then he gets this offer from, you can assume like Fatebringer mages or somebody like teleported to the material plane, came and recruited him. And now he has this single purpose that makes him important, which is to find you guys. And that's very validating to like that narcissist type.
Mm.
So now the fact that he's being valued by whether or not he's better than you guys, that makes you guys his entire focus.
Yeah.
Oh, right. And like, if he can take you out, then it's almost like, oh, I'm actually better than these people who were the
who
best.
Who already, so it, who beat me. Yeah. Like, you guys brought him to his lowest. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's his own fault. It's not, this is his flawed way of thinking.
Yeah.
But you guys beat him. So now he has to defeat you guys so that he can, like, retain face in his own way. Mm-hmm.
Am I misremembering this, or did the dream druid bail on him?
Everyone, yes, they ran away.
They ran away. Because I've been like, when that druid was eavesdropping in the city, I was like, is this connected to that dream druid in any way?
It also could be involved because you don't know if the dream druid Eloise, who was like one of the betrayers in the Crick, there were like a few of the old folks from the old folks circle.
Yeah.
The inhospitable ones
turned against Meemaw and helped Glenn, and they all retreated. Or a couple of them retreated. I think one or two might have died. No. They got the ambush on you guys. They all got away. But Big Bev was tracking them.
Oh, okay.
So Glenn ran off, was kind of just, you know, kicked out of the Crick, essentially.
Yeah.
So he was kind of just ripe for being picked up by somebody like Queen Jovir, who could probably manipulate his ego. Like probably somebody could just show up and be like, we heard you're the person to bring in to get these people. And so he is important now via you guys. Whereas back in the day, he just thought he was important.
Yeah.
So it is like so I don't think he has a higher opinion of himself. I think he's desperate, but acting confident, if that makes sense.
Okay, interesting.
Maybe more dangerous because of
that. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that just because of like the nature of the Feywild is this like lawless place, like all of the criminals we've encountered are just kind of like funneling here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes sense. So it's just like, where are you going to go?
Yeah.
You're like, it's like the perfect place to hide out.
Yeah.
I hope we encounter some more of those druids from like the old folk circle.
Made me wonder.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Okay.
Perhaps.
Okay, time will tell.
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, dream druids, druids that predict things, Glenn being around.
What kind of overlap do they have?
And also like the Crick had overlap with the Feywild. Yeah. So I was like, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Did anything surprise you, Murph?
I was just impressed by how, again, like whenever we do these kind of encounters that are not traditional, where it's a chase or something like that, I'm always just delighted by the unique ways with which you guys finish off the bad guys.
Yeah. I love the spell command. It's one of my favorite spells to just witness, because I'm just like, great command, great word. And then it's so exciting to see if people save.
Like, yeah. I mean, it only lasts for one round, but in a chase, that's
so helpful. Need,
yeah. Change. Huge.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And also it was like with those guys, it was like, I wouldn't have tried it on the mages, but on those guys, I'm like, okay, if you're more just like beefy guys, like maybe I can get you.
How many people do you get to say it to? Three people?
You can upcast it to add people onto it.
Nice.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, and getting to say it to multiple people who are chasing you is so awesome.
Yeah.
It's like odds are at least one of them is going to turn around.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And with squads of like these three knights, you can get a whole squad out of there.
I love just like the kind of high stakes combat that comes with mounted combatants too.
Yeah.
Where like it can change in an instant. Like if you knock them off the horse, like they're done, but like they're stronger because they're on the horse or, you know, the griffin.
Oh my God. I loved that scrambling mage who just couldn't get a fucking ride.
both the mages, the mages managed to be scary, but also get absolutely pumped.
Yeah. Give me your griffin. All right. You have to come pick me up.
Yeah.
Shit. I lost that griffin.
I think you're probably still a little bit afraid of them, but they definitely got punked.
It's extra funny for someone whose whole thing is like reading the future. To get just like absolutely so punked.
Yeah.
Someone in full armor just scrambling onto different griffins.
But there was a spell that was cast on Saul that should have really been a like Achilles' heel.
Whoa.
I used Bigby's hand with one of the Fatebringer mages.
Oh,
that was like
the
necrotic hand that I described coming out of the ground and then trying to grab Saul. Mm-hmm. The Bigby's hand has a +8 to strength on like grapple checks. Mm-hmm. And so doing like a contested grapple against that shouldn't be good for Saul, but
you're slimy.
With his slimy skin, he got advantage. And then I also rolled a nat 1.
Whoa.
Because I think, because you only rolled, even with advantage, you ended up getting like a 13 or something.
Yeah, it was
like
not
that. So chances are, you know, a 5 or higher and this dude grapples you, which is, that's really bad in a you know, a chase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Getting grappled right. by his hand in a chase.
That's really fun. That's really fun to have given them Bigby's hand.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to have that spell as a character, but I haven't had a chance to have that as a character yet.
I
haven't really played, even though Wizard is my favorite class, I just haven't played a ton of them.
But. It does seem like, it's like a, I feel like it's like one of the most famous spells in D&D, but like for a reason, because it's like as a wizard, you can just like set up your fighter so well.
Yeah. It's such a cool thing too for specifically, you know, a show, like an actual play show, because it's just so cinematic to having while the wizard's up there casting other spells, there's just this magical hand that's like fighting the monk.
Especially in the forest.
Yeah. I think we finally got, at the end of Eldermorn, I finally got is it fifth level spell that Bigby's hand is? I think I finally got fifth level spells for Fia, but it just didn't end up, I don't think I ever ended up using and it. Then and then we fought Bigby's
You fought a living Bigby's hand and voiced by Lou. And it was just so aggressive. So fucking funny. Any last minute Roses and Thorns?
I have a rose for, I just love that Fred and Barney lived in like a little.
God damn it. God damn it.
I have a bud for the Flintstones reboot that I feel is in the air.
Right? Yeah.
The live action Flintstones reboot starring Ryan Gosling as Barney.
You can feel the thunderheads rumbling.
He would unfortunately be a solid Barney.
Yeah, Ryan can rumble. Yeah.
Wow. Ryan can rumble.
Who could be Fred, though, is the real question. Who's your fan cast?
Fred has huge boomer energy, and that is not hot right now.
Yeah, well, it wasn't hot then either. It's never worked. But Fred's never worked in a single property.
Boomer humor was popular when boomers were like the parents bringing their kids to
Adam
the
Devine.
Oh, oh my god, wow, you're so right.
Oh god damn it.
Holy
you're
shit.
Making me a Flintstones
Holy
movie
fucking
work.
Shit.
Are you talking
that would
about
be
a millennial
right.
Fred?
Whoa. Are we ready for a millennial? Are we ready for a millennial Fred?
Millennial Fred?
Wow. I think that could really heal our country.
Wow.
I think that's what we need as a nation.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I could really, because Fred's attitude about life and Wilma really is a big thorn for me.
Wilma, I really thought about my actions and I want to apologize to you.
Yeah, I think if Fred is played less, because there's like a cockiness to Fred.
Yeah.
And you could play
frankly,
that
meanness
funny.
To Fred.
Mm-hmm. But you could play the cockiness. Right. It's like the meanness that I'm like, shave that off. It doesn't work. Mm-hmm. It doesn't land as
Have
funny.
Him be more
he's angry. Fred
he should
angry.
Be more, he should be more like put upon and be put in kind of like funny situations.
Frustrated.
Yeah. Almost like a Chris Farley type.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Bam. Just like angry Fred, but angry at the world, not at his wife.
Yeah. Where are the people to write this?
Yeah.
It's true,
I know.
Let's get the rights to the Flintstones.
Murph, I think you could just get like absolutely yoked and play Fred.
Wow.
Just like gain like 200 pounds of pure muscle.
Whoa.
It's not
only
wrong.
Sign on if you get to do pillow sack costumes.
Yeah. I can.
When is the pillow Live my truth. Fitting.
And I want to play all of the dinosaur appliances.
Yeah. And the great kazoo.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
God damn it. If one of us is going to play Fred, we got to get on it because he has a young family. We're going to age out of that role. We're going to age out of that role quick.
That's true. Now is the time.
Now is the time. Yeah. Fred's in his 30s, I think. So
right.
Time's ticking.
And the cavemen do not live long.
There you go. Yeah, time's ticking.
How
for
about
me.
For Wilma and Betty, Karen Gillan?
Wow, okay.
For Wilma.
Yeah.
Okay. She's a redhead. And then maybe, you know, the girl who stars in Rebel Moon?
Yes.
And she's in the movie with Batista coming out. I want to say her name is like Sophia Boutel or something like that. Mm-hmm. I think she could rock the Betty look.
Why don't we
she has sort of like the short cropped black hair.
Yeah. Why don't we also just put Batista in as Fred? That's a good
Shit.
One too.
Because he's like so gruff
Fred?
But so kind.
Yeah.
That would
Batista could play Mr. Slate too.
Oh, true.
Shit, you're right.
Damn, we got Jake talking about Mr. Slate, which is a sign that we've talked too much about the Flintstones. I literally, there's something broke in my brain and I thought we were back on the mixed bag because we've talked about the Flintstones for already an hour and 20 minutes today. So,
oh my God. Oh, Lord. Do we need to apologize to everyone for this?
Maybe.
I'm going to give a rose to us for apologizing for
Oh,
for talking about the Flintstones.
I mean, Big Bud for like, actually, Big Rose to you, Murph, for like having this like really cool encounter that leads to what seems to be like a naval battle that's coming up.
Oh my God, Bud to going a sea.
Yeah.
And Bud, Tris of course, too. For Acriana. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Triss too and Zunark have been kidnapped.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And it is, I mean, it would be, they are relatively new friends, so it would be fair if you guys just wanted to be like, well, I guess they're gone.
They'll be okay. Yeah. I'm sure of it.
If you guys were edgy rogues, then maybe they would be screwed.
Mm-hmm. In theory, I wouldn't be opposed to having that happen in a campaign, but I feel like I'm like a little too attached to both.
Yeah.
For like very different reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for very, like a Triss I'm attached to just because I just want to keep her around and have her be stupid and never grow and, or change.
Right.
But Zunark, I'm kind of like, I feel like I like you. I don't know your story yet.
He also did help you guys out. I mean, he literally like helped you guys get out. He drew the attention of other mages so that he could split up.
And he's then, the one who knows where the dragon turtle is and stuff like that.
He's got an army.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
In the like hour that you've known him, he's helped you out quite a bit.
Very useful.
I feel like it makes sense to save him.
Yeah, I can't imagine walking away.
Yeah.
Should we hook up Glynn with Triss too?
Oh my God.
Whoa. I would hook up Glynn with anyone.
I would love to see them destroy each other.
It's true. Yeah, would they be like a positive and negative force?
I picture them both being in the kind of relationship where they sit next to each other, both looking at other people's Instagrams.
Yes.
Just nothing is ever good enough for them.
I long for the day when Kenna kills Glynn.
It's happening while Callie's making out with the queen.
Yeah. I just throw out all my notes. Sorry, she used what is the ambassador of peace and got a
emissary of peace,
which allows you to pull crown with DC-40.
You're right. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
Using emissary of peace. Yeah.
All right. We're going to go ahead and wrap this one up. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back next week with something fun and then something fun over on the Patreon. Until then, Caldo, why don't you take us out?
Oh, gladly. Everybody get ready to roll those Batista Fred dice.
Rolling with the Batista Fred dice. God damn it.
It really works.
We already talked about this.
Tom Hardy is also an option for Fred Flintstone.
I don't hate that.
Mm-hmm.